Good morning. 7:43 now on the Mighty 690 as we go throughout a Friday. It's time for a legislative update, and we have joining us State Senator Virgil Peck. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning, Mr. Copeland. It is great to be here this morning and great to have a little bit of moisture outside.
That's right. As we got just a little over half an inch here just from this morning.
My goodness, you guys over here in Coffeyville are much more fortunate than what we are to the west, at least a little bit.
We have been lucking out these last couple times.
It's pretty serious for our ag producers, and that in turn affects the state's economy, because agriculture is a heavy contributor to the state's economy. So it's something that's pretty important that we get some moisture, and the forecast is looking like we might get some, which is great. We need to continue to pray for rain or do a rain dance or whatever, something to get some rain. But I personally prefer the prayer route.
That's right. Well, hey, lots of stuff coming up. I know we've had a pretty busy week, political-wise, you know, locally with these forums and everything. So a chance for those candidates to get out there as we're kind of gearing up for another election. So,
it is that time. Every year, every August, if there's enough candidates, there will be a primary. And then certainly every November, there will be a general election. This year is the city school election, and I know KGGF has done a great job. I have heard several candidate forums on KGGF, and last night was a school board election, or I'm sorry, candidate forum. And be careful what you listen to, because sometimes people have incorrect information. But be that as it may, this week was Kansas Voter Registration Day, and that was in conjunction with the National Voter Registration Day. And even though that voter registration day is passed, it doesn't mean that people can't register to vote if they're not currently registered to vote, or they need to change their registration or update their registration. That's something, James, that a lot of people don't consider or realize, the fact that you've got to keep your voter registration correct. Meaning, if you're a lady, you get married and you change your last name, or for any other reason a person changes their name, they must register with their current name. If you move, even if it's just across the street, you are at a different address than what you are registered at. You need to update your voter registration information. I was in Topeka yesterday, and I was actually in the Secretary of State's office, and I just mentioned the National Voter Registration Day and the Kansas Voter Registration Day and these things, and they said, yes, you're correct. Need to make certain you're up to date. Now, if you move across the street or change your name and you don't change your registration, you can usually vote on a provisional ballot. But then it's subject to determination by the canvassing board, county commissioners, as to if that vote will count or not. You vote provisionally, it's put in an envelope, and then they will determine if, well, it's not a big deal that Sally James is now Sally Smith, because it's the same person. She's registered at the address, etc. They'll usually let the vote count, but also Sally needs to update her voter registration. Found it interesting, just a couple quick statistics. 73% of Kansans who are eligible to vote, meaning 18 years of age and above, are registered. Of course, some of those registrations are people who have passed on. But in 2022, of the 73% registered, 57% cast a ballot, which is 57% for a voter turnout is actually pretty good. But that tells you that not near everyone who's eligible to vote is voting. And so it really makes every vote even that much more important. So it's important for voters. We got an election coming up November 7th, and it's important to know who the candidates are for the city, for the college, for the school boards, because they impact your lives pretty directly when it comes to property taxes.
And do you know, you may have mentioned it, but just for the folks who just tuned in, the deadline for, you know, the procrastinators out there to get registered.
I don't know the exact date, but it's generally right at, I think, 20 days prior to election day. So that would be mid-October. So right now, listeners listening, you got adequate time. But don't do, I guess, the James Copeland thing, maybe, and procrastinate,
yeah,
or just
right.
For others.
It's just, you know, I'm just thinking of anyone out there.
Oh, you're speaking individuals. Yeah. I got you. But, yes, there's still adequate time. But there does come a cutoff time.
Yep.
If you're not properly registered by that time, you cannot vote in the upcoming election.
Gotcha.
Some people have pushed for same-day voter registration. That would be wrong. Absolutely wrong, because you could have a person register to vote in Coffeyville. They could run over to Tyro, register to vote. They could run over to Caney, register to vote. And then the Independence, I mean, all over, and vote many times. And it won't be known until after Election Day that that person voted multiple times, and their ballot was just put in with all the other ballots, so you can't single it out and find out which one. So I strongly oppose same-day voter registration. That just would not work in the United States. Not a good idea. I like the way in Kansas you've got to be registered ahead of time, because it's not like Election Day snuck up on us. It's kind of like Christmas. James, some people apparently don't seem to realize that Christmas is December the 25th every year, because they're doing their shopping on December the 24th.
Oh, yeah. No. There are a lot of people who like to go out in the frantic crowds and see what they can find left on the shelves.
Something like that. The same thing with voting. There's an Election Day, so just plan accordingly.
Gotcha. Well, switching gears just a little bit, I know we've had an announcement here recently regarding the turkey season.
There won't be a fall turkey season in 2023. Now, will there be one next year? Maybe, but only if the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks takes action. They did take a decision to not have a fall turkey season this year. And that's not just based off of someone decided, okay, let's don't allow turkey hunting. There's been a decline in the population of turkeys in Kansas for 15 years. It's been a slow, steady decline, but eventually it gets critical point. And by the way, this is not a problem that's unique to Kansas. A lot of states are having a reduced turkey population. Now, I don't have the answer as to why there is a reduced turkey population, but that has happened. There has been discussion. When I was a kid, James, in southeast Kansas, there were a lot of quail. There aren't anymore. There are some quail, but it's kind of a rare sight in my area to see a quail. And every so often I'll see some by some farm field. But used to be the discussion, well, the turkeys are killing the quail or the quail eggs. There's no evidence to that fact that it happened, maybe. But anyway, back to the turkey season. The Department of Wildlife and Parks has made adjustments over the past few years. They went from 4 bird bag limit in 2017, which was 6 years ago, down to 1 bird. So they were trying to sort of allow for the population to replenish itself. And they shortened the season to 41 days, which is still a really long season. That's over a month, about a month and a half. But it had been previously 123 days. So it's something that there has been steps taken. Last fall, according to Wildlife and Parks, there were around 500 birds harvested. So that's not a significant number of birds that were harvested last fall. But anyway, if you are planning on turkey hunting this fall, I'm sorry, hunters, there will not be a turkey season in Kansas.
Sure. Well, it's a little unfortunate, but we understand, you know, we definitely want to preserve that population. Has there been any talk in, you know, this area, perhaps, because, you know, hunting can be a big tourism draw, and trying to increase those quail, pheasant, and turkey populations? I mean, we've got some really world-class, you know, areas and resources for that here in southeast Kansas. Has there been any talk of that, you know, trying to work with some of these landowners to work to increase those populations? Because there really is a lot of opportunity here, I think.
That hunting is a big tourism draw to particular areas. To my knowledge, there has not been necessarily some discussion. I know Wildlife and Parks is constantly looking at trying to maintain the right balance of population of all hunted animals, edible animals, turkey, quail, squirrels, deer, etc. And so I don't know. I don't have an answer to that. That might be something that Representative Blexen answer better.
Be good, interesting to talk more about that. And we have no shortage of deer, so
there seems to be no shortage of deer. You see them along the highway a lot, which is a shame. Southeast Kansas does have some of the best and biggest bucks in the country. We do have a lot of hunters that come to our area from a long ways away to hunt.
Oh yeah,
because we've got some pretty good game here.
I know folks who come for weeks at a time. You know, they'll up and back, and I mean they really enjoy it. So they make sure they get all they get a bunch of tags and that sort of thing. So
and we like their dollars coming into our state. They're recycled multiple times.
Yeah, I can tell you firsthand, it definitely is a tourism draw. So I know. Let's see. Switching gears once again, you're going to be up in Topeka here this next week.
I am going to be in Topeka a lot over the next 20 days. I was there yesterday, but next week I will be in Topeka for the Special Committee on Foreign Adversary Investments and Land Purchases. That is a long name for a committee. Basically, we're going to be looking at something that would probably be a good idea for the federal government to take a look at, and that has to do with foreign adversary ownership of land and investments in the state of Kansas. And there's been a growing concern about this issue, about foreign ownership of U.S. farmland especially. And that's really what we're looking at, is agriculture land or farmland, particularly around our military bases, because there have been 24 states pass some level of restrictions on foreign ownership of land. Now, Kansas is not one of those 24 states. I did introduce legislation, pretty restrictive, Senate Bill 100 this last session, but it was introduced because it starts the discussion. And we're going to have at least 2 days of discussion initially, then we'll have additional days. And when you think back about the start of our country, back when the Declaration of Independence, right about that time, the Americans, they didn't like the way the Crown dealt with foreign ownership of land. As a matter of fact, there was, and they enacted restrictions on foreign ownership. They viewed British loyalists as enemies of the United States, and at that time they were, 250 years ago or so. As far as currently, foreign investors do hold... In 2021, I'm sorry, so it's a couple years ago, but they held 40 million acres of U.S. ag land. Now, this doesn't count the urban areas where there are some businesses that they have an office, a corporate headquarters of some sort. That doesn't count. This is ag land only, but 40 million acres of ag land, and that was up by $2.4 million over 2020, which is about a 3% increase in the ownership of foreign land. Now, this is a delicate balance, James, between property owners' ability to sell their property and national security, or security for the rest of our state and country. Because when we have adversaries that own our land, particularly around our military bases, that's not a good thing. I see it as a matter of national security. When we get together next week, there will be an overview from legislative research about foreign adversary designations. What exactly is a foreign adversary? Figure that out. First thing, you got to start at the ground. Potential threats of foreign adversaries. The China Aid Association will be there to talk to us about that. I'm interested to see what they have to say. And then Kansas-specific threats. Our Attorney General will talk to us about some specific threats. There will be an opportunity for private citizens to engage the committee, to appear before the committee, to give their thoughts on what the discussion is. We will have a presentation on the threat assessment from a retired U.S. Navy captain and some others. But it'll be a pretty extensive, starting at 9:30 a.m., on Tuesday, going through 4:30, and then the next morning, same thing, starting at 9:30 a.m. So we'll spend a lot of hours digging into trying to figure out what we should do, what we shouldn't do. Let's make sure we get it right, because we do want to protect our land from foreign adversaries. Some people think, well, this is really not a big deal. It may not be too big right now, but it could be if we don't take preemptive steps.
And do we know what China's goals are? You know, this one that, you know, comes to mind with their buying this land, you know, around these military bases, like you say. I mean, do we have any idea what they're thinking of doing?
Well, we have some ideas, but the Chinese don't exactly lay their cards on the table and say, you know, we're going to plan to do this type of thing.
Well, the other thing is, you know, we have to remember, not too long ago, we had some Chinese researchers at K-State who were flat out just stealing, you know, research and, you know, stuff that kind of had some national security interests as far as our agriculture side. So, you know, they're pretty blatant about some of these things they're doing. So, I mean, it's definitely something that we need to keep an eye on, it seems like to me.
Not only China, but you've got the Iran, Iraq, you've got Turkey, you've got several countries that really aren't friendly to the United States. So some of them try to act like they're our friends or allies, but they have ill intentions for our country. And so, yes, we've certainly got to be careful on who is here and why. The United States should be owned, by my way of thinking, by United States citizens. And now there's going to also be discussion about, okay, James, you are an agent. I shouldn't use you because you're not. But as an example for discussion purposes, James is an agent for China. James, an American citizen, is an agent for China. He buys this land, puts it in his name, but allows China to control it, to control him through money. That's something where I don't really know for certain how we're going to address that and make certain that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But that's been voiced to me numerous times.
McCarthyism starts to come to mind and stuff with all that. So as we kind of wrap up here, there's a little bit of discussion here on the U.S. refugee count. And you want to stress that refugees is a little bit different than this illegal immigration we're seeing, right?
No, it's a lot different. Yeah, it bothers me. I will just say this. It bothers me that we hear so much in the media, not necessarily KGGF, but in the media about migrants coming to the United States from our southern border. Listeners, these are not just migrants. These are illegal aliens. These are people who are breaking into our country illegally. We have laws on the books. We don't mind immigration. As a matter of fact, we need immigrants. But come here legally, become a part of our culture, learn our language, be an asset to the United States. But there is a U.S. Refugee Processing Center. And for the state of Kansas, not counting Ukrainians, because we're kind of giving them, looking the other way with Ukrainians, which I'm not real comfortable with there entirely, but we have 691 refugees that have come in the last 11 months, since October the 1st of last year. I found it interesting, James, the largest percentage of those are from the Congo. 318 of 691 refugees. And refugees are different from illegal aliens. Or if you want to call them migrants, that's fine. You can call them what you want, but it doesn't change who they are. But refugees are different. They are more welcomed here because they're trying to get away from bad things back home.
Sure. Well, a very interesting statistics. We appreciate you sharing that. That is State Senator Virgil Peck, always running out of time. But, sir, thank you so much for joining us today.
Appreciate the opportunity.
All righty. And coming up, we do have our Ask the Expert segments on the way, and we'll be getting started with Open Line right around 8:35.